working in film is weird, especially now. I don't know how many you're familiar with it, but we had an event happen around 2010 called the DSLR Revolution. And this kind of started with the release of the Canon 5D Mark II. And without getting too technical, the simple way of understanding this is that when that camera came out, it was a photography camera. And it was very, very beautiful stills, you know, high image quality, tons of megapixels, etc. But the real game changer was it shot 1080p HD. So it shot high definition video at 30 frames per second, and later with an update, due to much demand, 24 frames per second. Film is generally shot at 24 frames per second or 30 frames per second. There's obviously, it's a much more complicated than that, but it's a very simple way of looking at it. So you now had basically affordable, high definition cameras that shot at film frame rates. And the image was actually very nice. And you had the ability to buy lenses that were not super expensive and get different looks. So really 2010, you saw this start, and it's 2015 and the entire film world has drastically altered. You've gone from tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, to get high definition cameras to now probably one of the cheapest 1080p HD cameras out there is still Canon. They have the Rebel T4 or T5, not even a T5i, which is another version. It's T5s. You can get a 1080p HD camera for like $300 now and be able to change out lenses. And the whole transition was very, very rapid. You have cheaper cinema cameras now. You have affordable cinema lenses, and the whole price has dropped so quickly that people who bought cameras 5, 6, 7 years ago, most of those cameras are not worthless. That would be a little harsh indictment, but they're not. I mean, you get the point. They're not as competitive to what's coming out now. You're getting insane resolutions and power for such an affordable cost. And what this did was it allowed a whole new generation of storytellers to come out. I know that sounds so hoity-toity and whatever, and this isn't a new concept. There's probably hundreds of articles written about this. It's very common vernacular to refer to the DSLR revolution when you're in camera departments or just on film sets in general. And chances are you've seen people at events doing it. You can watch sporting events and see people running around with DSLR cameras shooting video. So anyway, you had these whole new generation of filmmakers come out, people in even high school and younger, people in college who'd never had a background in film, and they were suddenly, you had people who were just through patience and lots of planning and crafting a good story, probably the most important part, were able to go to things like Sundance and Cannes and get into film festivals for, you know, $500, $1,000, $2,000. I mean, this is the premier film festivals, and you had people getting stuff on YouTube and on Vimeo, you know, because you had the advent of all your streaming services now. So people's stories started getting out, and they had the tools to do it, and the barrier to entry has dropped so rapidly. And what's, you know, I'm a product of the DSLR revolution in a lot of ways. I could never have gotten into film if it wasn't for that. I bought my Canon Rebel T3i my fourth year of college. I was about to finish my history degree for $600 because I got the bug to do film, and a bunch of people around me were telling me, just do it. So I picked that camera up. I still use it sometimes. It's kind of like my little B camera, and I lend it to people. It's still a powerful tool. And it really opened the door for me to even start doing it. I mean, the fact that I graduated college 2012 and less than 2 years later was doing film full time as a freelancer. And, you know, it's month to month, it's feast or famine type of industry, but it's sure, I'm proud of what I've done, and I could sit here and brag all about how I made it myself and pulled myself up on my own bootstraps and self-taught. But the fact is, the circumstances really did open the doors for me. I got so lucky to be a part of this DSLR revolution and finishing college when it was happening. And part of the one thing that's really interesting about it is you get these weird gaps. You get these really, not even necessarily gigantic gaps. It's not like people who just don't get films. And it's a good example is I was on a set today, and this is what made me start thinking about this and why I decided to record now. By the way, quick side note. So I know this is a day late, and it's late, you know, in the evening too. So it's almost 2 days late. But pre-op before I get my corrective eye surgery coming up. My eyes were dilated half the day yesterday, and it got bogged down and eventually just didn't do it. So it is going up today, 1 day late. Yeah, what do you want from me? But as I was saying, today when I was on set, we were shooting on a Red Epic and a Red Scarlet. And just so you understand, the Red Epic is like what they shot The Hobbit on. I mean, it's probably one of the most used cameras in Hollywood. Red and Arri Alexa are kind of the big dogs right now. We shot on the Red Epic and the Red Scarlet, and I'm fully capable of operating a Scarlet, pulling focus, an Epic as well, pulling focus, changing settings, going through menus, you know, running these very, basically computers with sensors on them. And yet I couldn't identify a 1030 head. This is like a basic mount for a camera. And I'm very much part of this whole group of people going into film now who either can be cinematographers or they're directors or they're screenwriters. They're doing something very specific. And since we didn't go through the ladder and go through the traditional method or go to film school or really have any background, we have these really strange gaps. I mean, I'm a very confident camera operator and consider myself a relatively skilled cinematographer, but I struggle to identify the most basic components of a light kit sometimes. I mean, this is a very strange thing, and it was not common from what I understand until a while ago. So it's kind of like, it's like being able to read or write and never really understanding the actual tools like subject-verb agreement and adjectival phrases. I mean, that's probably the best analogy I can come up with, to be honest. But yeah, it's just an interesting thing about today, and it kind of leads to a lot of stress, to be honest. I'll get on a set, and I'm really excited, and I'm ready to do my job, and then I'll be sent off to grab a piece of equipment, and there's like 50-50 shot. I can't identify it, and I can figure it out. I mean, that's honestly people who went on set for the first time 20 years ago, whatever, right? You're a production assistant, PA, which is kind of like, quote-unquote, the lowest on the totem pole. You're running around. You might be picking up coffee and food. You might be helping rig up lights. You never really know what you're going to be doing. But, you know, they get told to go grab a piece of equipment, and they're not, it's a set. It needs to be a well-oiled machine. They're not going to stop and explain it to you. So in some ways, it's expected that I'm not going to know everything, and I got to figure it out. But to be hired as an assistant cameraman, well, in this case, I was a second AC, and not know things, the stuff I don't know can just be very weird and just very odd by most standards. So it's I don't know. I don't really know what my point is. It's kind of an interesting phenomenon that a lot of us have observed. And again, I'm not brilliant for figuring this out. A lot of people notice it. And I don't think it necessarily makes me a bad filmmaker to have some of these gaps. It's just part of the trade-off. But, you know, every time I go to set, I learn more, and I got great friends like Ben Chunky and others who help point things out to me and, you know, help me when I really get stumped. So, you know, it's good to know. It's good to be working with a lot of people who tend to have that sense of camaraderie. So, and the other thing that was interesting today, though, was when I was on set, I don't want to get into the specifics and get myself in trouble, but I thought we were shooting one kind of shoot, and found out it was another kind of shoot. No, not porn. but I found out it was kind of like supporting an industry I'm not particularly fond of, and that's probably putting it lightly, but one I did not really feel cool supporting. And so you have your little moment of like, oh, do I stand up and walk out? And you think to yourself that you're going to be the high-valued person and principled and stand up for your beliefs, but also the other part of it, and this is just work in general, as I'm sure many of you know, you agree to do something and you tell someone you're going to do something. In this case, I took a contract. I'm going to go work on a set. You know, walking off set's not exactly a great option. And if I'd known in advance exactly what it was, maybe I would have reconsidered. But then there's also like, well, you know, I need to make money. And the pay was actually very good today. It was actually a very nicely paying job, and those don't come super often. It's kind of a can be kind of a tough town sometimes for this. And I had another shoot a few months ago, a documentary I worked on, whereas I started very much disagreeing with their methods and found it kind of manipulative. And honestly, I found the person's work kind of dangerous. I thought they were kind of possibly endangering their subjects. And again, in that case, I was like, I didn't kind of realize it till partway through, and I finished it out. And then when they asked me to come back, I said no. So, you know, not like, woohoo, go me, pat myself on the back. But it's just, it's so weird because you think about these scenarios, they're hypothetical, and you always think you're going to rise up and be this great person and do, you know, these amazing feats of heroism, right? Or just bravery and standing up for what you believe in. When rubber hits the road, it can be the situations get much more complicated. And I don't know, just kind of related to film, that's where I'm experiencing it right now. Sometimes I'm on a set where the conditions are really poor, or people just don't value your time, or y'all are running hours over, and there's all this pressure because you're in this weird convergence of art and business, and so you're suffer for your art, but your time's valuable and you got to pay bills and you got to eat, right? I mean, it's very interesting kind of, I don't know, it's a lot of fun and a lot of anxiety that goes with the work, on compounded by the freelance lifestyle, of course. So, and you know, as a, like I was saying, like the pay and the rates are tricky, like pay rates. So, you know, one thing I missed from my 9 to 5, and actually it was more like a 7 to 3:30, but anyway, one thing I kind of missed from it was obviously the security and knowing when the paycheck's coming, how much it's going to be, etc. And honestly, though, as much as you miss that, I kind of got over that very quickly with freelance. You know, feast or famine, whatever. I'd saved enough money and owned a lot of my own gear. So, you know, I've kind of got a plan going. But the thing I really wasn't prepared for, I didn't really think about until it started happening, was how every single job, it's like sitting across from an interviewer again. And you're once again having to not only, it's not as much like, here's my resume, here's this. You know, you send people a snapshot of your work, but often I probably only send my resume like 10% of the jobs I take. Usually it's my demo reel, which is kind of like a resume, or they just get a reference from somebody. It's very much an industry built on references. But where is I going with this? The pay, yeah. So it's like you're at the table again having to, they ask you, what do you want for your salary, right? And you're always in this game of back and forth where you call them and you say, well, what's your budget for my position? They go, well, what's your rate? And you don't know how hard to hit them. You don't want to underball it. You don't want to come at them with like, oh, I want $1,000. And they're like, you're way out of our price range. And then you lose a $500 job or $200 job or $50 job, whatever it is. And on top of that, there's this, we're in a right to work state. So there's unions here, but they're, and there's union rates, and they're enforced on a union set, sort of, but most sets are not union exclusive. There's a little bit of pressure when LA production comes down here to go union, but that's a whole other game of politics. It's a right to work state, and then, so you really kind of got to watch out for yourself, but you also got to think about the industry as a whole on an individual, like, on, as comprised of individuals in the same boat. So you wind up with these, you know, I'm a very strong advocate of, I don't like 12-hour work days. I don't think many people do, and we've kind of accepted it in film, and I'm a strong advocate of a 10-hour film day. 10 hard working hours, but 10 hours nonetheless, especially because a lot of these sets go 6 days a week, and people are commuting 30 minutes to an hour. It's kind of dangerous, to be honest. And the other thing I advocate for is don't undersell yourself, because not only are you not going to make enough money, but, you know, because we obsess with this idea of, oh, I just need exposure, I just need to make the film, I just need to make the film, I need to get on set. And that's true in the beginning. You're going to take those free gigs. That's kind of, you know, internship in film, quote-unquote. It's being a production assistant for little to no pay. But I meet people who own, you know, $2,000 cameras, a couple thousand dollars in lenses, a light kit, basic sound, and then they go out and they work for $100 a day. And it hurts them, because they become the cheap guy, and they'll never get, it's harder for them to get bigger jobs, because you're really only as good as and worth what your last job was in a lot of ways. So, you know, it's it hurts them and it hurts the rest of us, because then you've set the expectation for that producer or company or whoever of what it costs to make a movie. You know, I recently did a bid on a wedding contract, and I gave, you know, my friend a friend rate, and he went with us. He it wasn't like this came to blows or anything, but sorry, one second. So one of the what was interesting was that we came to him, and he was one of my good friends, and gave him a very good rate. At least I like to think so. And so thing is, though, he showed me another videographer, and he wasn't saying like, oh, we could go with this guy. He was just showing me comparison, just asking about like what was different, because he doesn't know anything. He's just trying to figure out what's going on, and he's got family and people probably paying for it, so he needs to explain these things to them. And shows me another videographer who's charging my rate out the gate. And our weddings, we do kind of what a lot of people do. It's 2 to 3 cameramen. You get a 45-minute to an hour-long video that's kind of like everything, and then you get a 5 to 10-minute highlight reel, essentially, which is like the nice little short, fun video. And, you know, you get all this work and all this stuff, and this guy had 3 cameramen, 2-hour video, goes to rehearsal dinner, all these things for the same price. And ultimately, I looked at his work, and it was fine. It wasn't great. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, he was terrible. He was totally, you know, he was fine. You know, kind of a get what you pay for kind of thing, but definitely produces some results. But ultimately, you know, I just said to him, look, you know, this guy, if you're asking me if I should charge less than this guy, the answer is no. He's just bottomed out his price. I mean, what he probably does is pays his shooters garbage, probably pays them $100 each, $150 each, and pockets the rest, because he's also shooting it and he's editing it. So it's kind of like when you see that, you kind of get frustrated. And the other kind of interesting side of this is that I talk about this big game, and for a lot of my friends, a lot of my fellow filmmakers like Andrew Bowie and all these guys are very talented and have had to deal with a lot of the same problems, because we're all kind of at the same level and rising together right now and doing our independent projects and freelance and pulling each other on gigs. You kind of have your little community and like a little core network generally, and we all talk about it. And I've always talked very big game about like, don't drop your rates, don't do this, and I get very passionate about it. And then, honest to God, I struggle heavily enforcing my own doctrine, because it's easy to say it, and then you suddenly get a phone call, you haven't had a job in a week, and someone comes at you with, you know, bring out your own camera and $150 for the day. $150 for a 12-hour work day with your own thousands of dollars in equipment, that's nothing. I mean, it's a relatively large, I mean, not a very, very big number, to be honest. It's a pretty damn small number. 12 hours of work, think about it. So, I'm just kind of repeating myself here, but if you need the money and rent's coming, sometimes you take those jobs and you kind of have to balance like, oh, but if I take it, and it's been a really interesting experiment lately to really, I've basically jumped my rates up by like 50% to see if how much work I lose, and, you know, just to see. And the last little tricky component is that if you charge these higher rates, you better do a damn good job. And that's where, like, a lot of this stress comes from, like, oh, what if I don't know these little basic things? Because if someone comes out and you get a very good rate on a job and they ask you to grab a piece of equipment, you can't even identify it, that's going to raise eyebrows. Because, you know, their job, you can't be mad at them for trying to lowball or trying to get the best bang for their buck, because they have a budget and it's their job to stick to their budget or do better than the budget. So I guess my whole point is all this stuff is so complicated, and I, you know, going into freelance and doing film, it's not going to be easy and it's going to be tricky and there's going to be all these components. But really, as you, today was really one of the first days, and that's probably an exaggeration, but sitting here and talking to you, my wonderful listeners, it really gave me a chance to kind of reflect on how I do this job. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's really it. I'm digging for more wisdom or more to expand on that, but that's really it. It's been a very interesting career path, I guess, and I love doing it, and I'm slowly making my way up, and running this production company with Mickey has been amazing, and I think we've got a lot of momentum going now. We're starting to get calls and people asking to intern, which is really odd. But it's been a very interesting learning experience, and I encourage any of you to, you know, tweet at me or email me, projectingpodcast@gmail.com. But you know, email me, contact me, give me a call if you know me. I don't know, it's just an interesting subject, and I'd like to talk to people more about it and get input, because there's so many components, it's so complicated, and it's really a big battle of like a changing industry and your experience and what do you value yourself and how do you place yourself in the industry and what's your values come into play and arts mean business. It's just so convoluted and it's so much to sort through. And sometimes you're just like, God, I just want to go on set and just play with cameras and push buttons. So, all right. Well, that's about it. Holler if you have any thoughts. And positive thoughts. On Thursday, I'm getting corrective eye surgery, so hopefully my cinematography career will not come to a grinding halt. I'm optimistic. But give me those good vibes. Cheers.